afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio on this sunny Sunday afternoon here, because we are having global warming in California. It's actually warm here. Weird. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power, the local Kubota John Deere dealer here in Redding, California. Pretty much anything tractors they can handle over there. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. And phone number is 226-9226. So if you have any tractor needs, implement needs,
parts, service, sales,
all of it, they do it all over there at Team Power. Yeah, we got a big crowd. So Team Power, 226-9226.
I just felt like I wasn't helping.
Yeah, good crowd noises.
Yeah, you like that? Crowd goes wild.
Okay, Stephen is with us.
And so, just to save time, Stephen, we introduced you at the end of last hour so we could maximize you, having you on here. Your book, God and Donald Trump, looks to be an awesome, awesome book. We're not that far through it, but very impressed with the tack you've taken. And obviously, this isn't something you just started doing last year. You've got 40 years in on this. So take it away.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your show. It's a privilege.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
And I'm always glad to talk about God and Donald Trump. You're right. I've been doing this for a long, long time. And I was involved in covering the election and covering some of these things in online and in print for Charisma Magazine. In fact, we devoted the October issue last year or a year ago to the election and how it was the most important election in our lifetime, and also printed articles by a couple of modern day Christian prophets who said very, very specifically that Donald Trump would be president, and this was against all odds. And I just felt that because this is not part of our public debate, most people, even a lot of Christians, don't even say or ask the question, where is God in all this? And that's really the story behind God and Donald Trump. I like to tell people that it's as much about God as it is Donald Trump, but it's really about what's going on in our nation and, you know, tying it into what happened with this incredible election.
Well, I got started on your book, and the first part of it is about the election and how that happened, despite what the mainstream media was saying. He had the following. He was drawing the crowds, and he picked up some early support from the Christian community. Talk to us about that.
Well, I partially agree. He did get some early backing, but most, with the exception of Jerry Falwell Jr. and Robert Jeffress, it was almost entirely from among what we'll call Pentecostals, mm-hmm. People like Kenneth Copeland or Paula White. And some of these people were people that said they felt that God had spoken to them and that this very, very unlikely candidate was going to be president. The evangelicals, and I document this in the book, were meeting secretly, probably about 30 or 40. It was reported in National Review, even though it was very confidential, somebody leaked it to the National Review, and they wrote about the process, and these people considered all of the candidates and decided to back Ted Cruz, that he was the one who had the best chance of winning. And, you know, I documented in the book that these people they just thought that Donald Trump was going to fall out of the race, and he got almost no support. Now, when Ted Cruz did not make it, these people switched over to Donald Trump almost entirely. And as the book says, and as most people know who follow this kind of thing, 82% of the evangelical community, and there's all different kinds of ways to define evangelical, but basically it's born people who believe that you have to be born again. They supported him. There are several reasons why. Because on the surface, he is not the kind of person we'd support. In fact, I personally supported Ted Cruz as well, and I was really turned off by you know, his gambling casinos and his three marriages and so forth. But then something happened. There was a group in New York City that met, 1,000 pastors from around the country, met with Trump in New York City, and Dr. James Dobson and people like that were there, and they were able to do a question and answer. And in that meeting, he really won them over. He didn't persuade them that he's a perfect person. In fact, let me say what I say in most of my interviews, because it's absolutely true, and we may even want to talk about this a little bit later, but my book does not portray him as being holy, and it does not portray him as saying he deserved the evangelical vote. In fact, he agreed with this because in his nomination speech at the Republican National Convention, he was thanking different groups and people and so forth for their support. And when he came to evangelicals on the reading the teleprompter, he went off script and said, "I don't even know that I deserve their support," which if you think about it is pretty humble. And that's another thing that came out. He was much more humble behind the scenes than people expected. And he has also become a convert to the issues that are important to very conservative Christians. Now, you know, the ones that get all the publicity and always come to mind are things like abortion and traditional marriage. But, you know, Christians are involved, are interested in a lot of other things like religious liberty, persecuted Christians around the world being supported. You know, there's almost a genocide going on in the Middle East right now with ISIS slaughtering entire communities of people who have been Christians for, you know, almost back to the time of the early church. And the Obama administration just pretended like it or acted as if they didn't even know it existed. Donald Trump has spoken up about that. So when he started talking about these kinds of things, people sat up and took notice. Plus, there was something else, and that is that he was running against Hillary Clinton. Now, I don't know which would have been worse, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
Hillary
it was
Clinton.
Just an incredible election, as far as I was concerned. You know, the fact that a man who is a calls himself a socialist, you know, came pretty close to getting the nomination. But Hillary Clinton is very far left, but then so would a lot of other nominees if, let's say, Elizabeth Warren had run and gotten the nomination. But with Hillary Clinton, she brought a level of corruption unlike anything we've ever seen in American politics, at least certainly in modern times. And so there wasn't much. A lot of people voted for Donald Trump. It was sort of anybody but Hillary. However, the danger for a while, and we can talk about this too, was that a lot of these people, a lot of good conservative people that are fed up with how things are going, they were going to do exactly what they did when Mitt Romney ran. They stayed home. Or in some instances, people would vote for a third party, you know, which is like throwing your vote away.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton would have gotten it, which I think, I personally think would have been a disaster.
And I think a lot of them
recognized, I was worried about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of them recognized that by staying home. You're just handing it over. And this time they didn't stay home.
You're right. And Hillary and with Mitt Romney, you know, they're having to speculate. But, you know, there are people who say that the number of Christians who stayed home because they could not bring themselves to vote for a Mormon made the difference between success and defeat, and that they actually helped to reelect Barack Obama for another 4 years. Now, I supported Mitt Romney. I admit I did it reluctantly, and part of it is, you know, who he was running against. But Mitt Romney, for whatever people don't like about him, and one of the things about Mitt Romney is that he knew evangelicals felt this way, and he returned the favor. He did not reach out to evangelicals in any way, shape, or form. For example, he did not have a meeting like Trump did in New York City. None. Zero. I'm almost certain I would have known about it had he done it. But, you know, he is a good, decent man. He's a family man. He's against abortion. You know, he would have been so much better than Barack Obama. This time, I think that people woke up, and I believe that we had a small part in that because we ran a blog on August 11th, 2016, by a fairly well-known pastor from San Diego called Dr. Jim Garlow of Skyline Church. And this was basically the blog. He said, here are about 15 reasons that you should vote for Donald Trump, even though you don't like him. And he started with the platform, and he went right down the list. He said, just compare the two platforms. The Republic. Now, I will admit that I don't read platforms. In fact, I've never read a platform. I only know what I hear in the press, which is what most of us do. But Christian leaders that I respect who have read the platform say that the Republican platform this time was better than almost anything really since the Second World War, and that the Democrat platform was not only bad, but it was worse than some of the previous ones. And even though you wonder if they're going to govern exactly what they say, at least it's an indication of where they're coming from. So you have that, and then, of course, he went right down the line and talked about how corrupt Hillary Clinton was, how he was right on issues on a lot of these things. Now, the blog went out on August 11th, before the election, just a couple of months later. It had been shared on Facebook or in other ways over 4 million times. We have never had an article go viral like that in our history. In fact, the highest one before was 2 million shares. So,
well, I think that really
a lot, I think that persuaded a lot of people, and then they persuaded people. It's kind of like, we've got to hold our nose and vote for this New York playboy, which is what a lot of people kind of called him. And mm-hmm. he certainly was like that, you know, at one time in his life. There is no question.
Right.
But the blog went out on August 11th. I remember very clearly because the same day I interviewed Donald Trump when he was speaking at a gathering of pastors in Orlando where I live. And I had been negotiating with the Trump people for a couple of months to try to get this interview. In fact, I'd been negotiating since the famous June meeting because I was unable to attend because Jim Baker had scheduled me sometime before to be on his program. And I've been to a lot of these kind of meetings, and, you know, you're facing the crowd. I figured it would only be 50 or 100 people. I had no idea it'd be 1,000. I had no idea it'd be as pivotal as it was. But when it came up, I thought, you know what? I'm already on board with Trump. I don't need to go up there to be persuaded. And besides, I want to get my own interview. And so it just so happened to be on August 11th. I had asked for 20 minutes. I know that someone like him is very, very busy. They gave me a 10 minutes. But several years ago, or more than 10 years ago, I had the privilege of being at the White House with six other Christian journalists before the 2004 election. And we had probably a half-hour meeting with George W. Bush, and we took turns, you know, asking questions. I have a lot of respect for George Bush, but he seemed kind of bored. It was, you know, he almost acted like he would have rather been somewhere else, and he was just kind of checking his head off
the list. Checking the box, yeah.
Contrast that to Donald Trump, who was very, very engaged, was respectful, gave me thoughtful answers, and really showed a side to me personally of a man who is polite and somewhat humble. He's not, you know, not the arrogant character that we see in here in the media.
We have to ask him that right after the break.
We'll ask you. After the break, I'd like to ask you about the importance of the Christian vote. I mean, in light of the response you got from the blog, the importance of the Christian vote in future elections. But let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't do the Romney thing again. I mean, you know, everybody stay home. That would have been Unbelievable. We would not be having this conversation now for many, many reasons. Our guest today is the author of God and Donald Trump. It is a book by Stephen Strang, and I think you'll really like it.
That kind of music was okay. Now we
and was on all the time.
It was on all the time. You can't do that now. Boy, that's a bad deal. Hey, we're with Stephen Strang, author of God and Donald Trump, and we were talking about the election and the Christian vote. The blog you did prior to the election, Stephen, got such an overwhelming response. Don't you think that should have sent a message on just how important getting the Christian vote is and winning elections in this country? Because as you said, you know, the prior election didn't show up. They stayed home. They didn't like it. And I guess they wanted to send a message, didn't show up. This time they did show up. And, what do you think? Is that a necessary element?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, they're having to speculate and all this stuff. We're having to speculate, but so are the pundits on TV as well. But there is proof that the evangelical vote made the difference. Now, we all know that it came down to a handful of states and it came down to a handful of votes. And we're having to, you know, try to figure out if the difference in those votes was from the Christian community, but I believe that it was. Now, we were talking earlier, referring earlier to how important the vote is. Well, it's very important because we're talking about the direction of our nation. And in fact, you know, that's really kind of the theme of the book, that things were going really badly in our nation. You know, we can recite a litany of them if we have time. And Christians were praying. I was praying. I'm sure you were praying.
Yep.
Many people were praying. Lord, what is it going to take to change things in this direction? I mean, under Obama, there were a lot of setbacks. You know, there were conservatives, which included ministries that were targeted by the IRS. When has that happened in American history?
Mm-hmm.
You know, religious rights went out the window because if you baked a cake and or if you refused to bake a cake or something,
right,
or a gay wedding, you know, you were persecuted, and the federal government actually sort of piled on, you know, whatever people were filing lawsuits. I mean, we could go right down the list. So as Christians, we believe that things are going bad, and I should say, that no politician can change things. It's like somebody said, the kingdom of God is not going to fly in on Air Force One. And I agree with that humorous statement. But it is, a leader will set the tone or the direction of the country. You can't change all of this just from the bottom up. If that were the case, they'd have good government in Africa. You know, there are several African countries that have very, big populations of not just Christians, but, you know, Pentecostal Christians that go to church all the time and are, you know, believing God and so on and so forth. But the, you know, they have dictators at the top and their economies are a mess and there's all kinds of corruption. And, you know, even though there are a lot of righteous people, but we were praying. It's like Mike Bickle said, we were praying that the Lord would raise somebody up. We didn't have anybody in mind. I say that the Lord raised up somebody that a very, very unlikely person that we did not expect. And in a lot of instances, as we've been discussing, didn't even like. But, you know, when we talk about, or even the secular people talk about how Donald Trump is kind of ripping up or ripping out, you know, what we call political correctness, where you have to say things a certain way and you almost have to think a certain way. An awful lot that has to do with Christian principles and values, you know, where, you know, they defend people who kneel during the national anthem when it's a protest against America. But there have been coaches that have just kneeled, not said anything, just kneeled on a football field and been fired.
Right. Or
just
players.
It's incredible what was happening.
Oh, sure.
And I think that Donald Trump, in the same way that he's challenging political correctness, that he's also challenging this. And also, I'll just throw in, he's also challenging what we call, what we now call the deep state. I never heard of that term until a couple of years ago. And most people would have said that was just a bunch of conspiracy theorists. But, I mean, there is something going on in our bureaucracy in Washington that goes beyond whatever party, that goes beyond whatever party or whatever person is holding the presidency at any given time. And as we've seen through the news media and reports that have come out, that there are people in Washington right now that are actively working against Donald Trump, including in his own party. But he doesn't seem to care. He's
right.
Tough as nails. He's weathered everything. And he says, come on, give me more. I can take it.
Well, the whole deep state.
Who but him could have shifted these things?
Well, the whole deep state issue or topic, I think, has really come to light because of Donald Trump. And I think it's being exposed for what it is. And I don't think there was another candidate on the ballot that would have really tackled that issue. I mean, it's always been there, but he's the first one to come along and say, enough's enough. You know, he knows he has the people's support to go in and make a lot of these changes. And I don't know. I don't think there was another candidate out there that could have done what he's doing.
Right. And there are an awful lot of people in America, even people that aren't necessarily strong Christians or maybe they're not Christians at all, who just have this sense that things are going bad in America. You know, everything from players disrespecting the flag, like we were talking about, to pop culture just getting more and more vulgar. And the breakup of the home, we could go right down the list. And you're right, Donald Trump is one of the few people who could stand up and say enough is enough. And, you know, the way he put it was he wanted to drain the swamp. And when he said that, people just sort of knew what he meant.
Yeah.
And you're right. A lot of
people didn't have to explain it
because of him and how he has stood up to these people.
Do you think he's been successful at that due to the fact that he isn't beholden to special interests? He came in on his own money and he came in with his own people and didn't have a bunch of lobbyists pulling the strings?
Well, it sure seems like that, doesn't it? Now, Mitt Romney put a lot of his money into the campaign too, but of course he was a politician. His father before him even had an unsuccessful run for president and was governor of Michigan. So he's been in politics all his life. And we could talk about others as well, but Donald Trump wasn't. And plus the fact that he came up in the construction business in New York City. And while he started off, the Democrats like to mention this, he started off with a $1 million loan from his dad. He parlayed that into a much, much, much larger fortune than his father ever had. Fred Trump was very, very successful, didn't have a high school education, became a landlord in New York City, and was worth, I think the book says, about $400 million when he died, which is pretty sizable, but it pales in comparison to what Donald Trump has done. But the reason I mention this is I can't think of anywhere it would be tougher to make it than New York City. So, I mean, he's had to, you know, the reasons are maybe different than the politicians, but, you know, it's like David was prepared for Saul by fighting lions and bears. And I'm not sure that Donald Trump even knows that comparison, but I would say the same thing, that him battling for all those years made him as tough as nails. But I've also, as I said earlier, found out that behind the scenes, he's really quite a nice guy.
See, and that's, you hear that all the time. And I think that our, you know, to say that our media does a disservice is like the understatement of the decade, but they don't, they just don't give him any credit for that. He, with his own money, bought, you know, did like banquets for all three of the shifts that he had at Christmas time. You know, all the guys that were running security and all that stuff, he made sure that they all had awesome Christmas dinners, you know, and took care of that himself. I don't know of presidents before who've really done stuff like that. But interestingly enough, with this comment that may or may not have been said last week about Haiti and whatever, it's very interesting that 2 years ago, Barack Obama had an interview with the Atlantic magazine there and said in that you know, throughout all this mess in Libya, that it was a mess. But privately, he didn't call it a mess, and to the reporters, and he called it an S show, and so that's not the first time a president's made a comment like that, but nobody's turned it into a I don't know, like a national referendum. Like they did last week. So Obama could do it. Nobody hears about it. You actually have to go research that in order to find that out.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because
it's crazy.
I heard the same thing on the news. I was not aware that Obama did it at the time because the news media didn't make a big deal about it.
No,
I don't
they never
think
said
it's
anything.
Right for Obama to say it. I don't think it's right for Donald Trump to say. You know, he admits that he's rude and crude, and but somebody, in fact, Mike Huckabee, Governor Mike Huckabee, who is a friend of mine, I'm glad to say, and did the foreword to the book, he went on TV the other day and said, if he said it, and the president says he didn't, so
right,
somebody's lying.
And nobody actually says that there was an unnamed source.
If he said it, Melania should wash out his mouth with a bar of soap.
Hey, well, while we're,
which is what my mother did when I was a little kid. If I,
that, yeah,
if I
we
said
did.
Something I shouldn't say.
I know I can't use Irish Spring or smell it for any reason anymore ever again. I can't even go in the soap aisle. I might smell Irish Spring, which would be bad.
This was locker room talk.
It was locker room talk. All right, we have to take a really quick break. Shoot, it seems like we're running out of time. Darn it. Very interesting. This is a great book, and we really appreciate your information. Hang in there. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Jesus, you gotta help me make a stand. You just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seen sunny days that I thought would never end.
And I'm sure James Taylor would freak out if he knew we were using his song to promote Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and that makes that song 10 times better.
Yeah, they have a brain hemorrhage. We're talking to Stephen Strang about his book, God and Donald Trump. Stephen, one of the chapters in your books, The Hermit of Laredo, talk to us about, I found it very interesting. Thomas Zimmer, talk to us about him.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because it is one of the most interesting things in the book. You know, I mentioned earlier that we had documented some Christian prophets. Some of your listeners may know Chuck Pierce. He's probably the best known, but also Lance Wallnau, Franca Media, and another man named Mark Taylor, who had really kind of stuck their necks out and said that they believed that God said that Donald Trump would be president. Well, while I was writing the book, somebody sent to me a video that had gone viral on YouTube, and it was from a Catholic priest from Rhode Island named Capaverde, and he told the story how this Catholic holy man who lived in Loreto, Italy, had predicted in the 1980s that an American businessman named Donald Trump would turn America toward God. He did not say he would be president, but he made this prediction privately to a young medical student named Dr. Curran, who is in Boston today. He had gone over to Italy to attend medical school, and this man, Tom Zimmer, was also an American who had moved over to Italy and lived there for some 20 or 30 years, and they had become friends, and he kind of mentored this. He was they were both very, very devout Catholics, and he kind of mentored this man, and he did other, he predicted other things. He predicted the Berlin Wall would come down, and I mean, that happened so long ago now, most of us don't think about it very much, but you know, when I was a kid, we would have never thought the communism would end in the way that it did in our lifetime. We just thought it was something that we were going to have to live with forever. Yet it, you know, it was almost like a miracle. And I believe in that instance that a lot of people were praying. So this old man came back to America in 2008, and he passed away the following year. And when Donald Trump ran for president, you know, announcing in 2015 and then running all through 2016, Dr. Curran told his priest this incredible story, and the priest believed him. And in fact, the priest had met this old man maybe 15 years before, one time when he was over in Italy. In fact, Dr. Curran had told him he ought to look him up, that he'd enjoy getting to know him. And he went to Mass many times a day. He spent all his time praying. And people like that, the Catholics call a holy man. So Father Capaverde felt it had enough credibility that he did this YouTube video, which I mentioned went viral. A blogger picked up on it and did some research and researched more into Tom Zimmer and basically said, look, when you look at this, you know, Catholics have a certain way they look at prophecy. One is it doesn't go against church doctrine. It doesn't go against the Bible, and it doesn't and that it comes true. And so he says, well, you know, having a president turn America toward God is certainly not against the Bible, and it's not against Catholic doctrine, and it did come true. So, you know, it boils down to, do you believe this doctor or not? And in the book, it's actually the epilogue, because it didn't really fit into the narrative. It was such an odd story that we couldn't even decide if we were going to, me and the editors that I worked with couldn't decide if we wanted to include it or not. But what I did was I wrote it up and I put it in my own blog, which is called The Strang Report. And people can see it at strangreport.com.
Oh, good.
And I just put it out there, told the story, you know, pretty much like I just described it. And it got 17,000 shares. Now, that pales by comparison to what I said earlier. But, you know, most of my blogs get under 1,000 shares. I mean, that's just, you know, the nature of the following that I have. This got 17,000 shares with absolutely no promotion at all. It just, it resonated with people. And I've had interviews, and I've been doing a lot of interviews for Biden, Donald Trump. I've had interviewers bring it up, and most of the interviews are so short that I can't tell a long story like this, but I'm glad you brought it up. And, you know, I say in there that I don't understand all of this, and I really don't. But as a Christian, I believe that there's a lot of mysteries of God that's just hard to understand. We have to take some things on faith. And I'm hoping that if nothing else, people will look at it and go, you know, maybe that happened. Could it have happened? I wonder what God's, if God's hand really was in this election, that he would reveal this, you know, to an American living in Italy, you know, a couple of decades ago.
Right, right. And, you know, I truly believe God had his hand in creating this country. I mean, if you read anything about George Washington, it was a very heavy influence on him. And so is it really that big a stretch to say that he reached down again and brought this man out to kind of get us turned around? Because
we were circling the drain.
I believe we had a president who was working against our values and against what our country was built on. And here we are now. You know, if you look around this country, I think the majority of people actually have a brighter outlook on where we're going now. And I think you have to attribute that to Donald Trump.
You're absolutely right. I mean, look at all he's accomplished in his first year. The news media doesn't give him much credit. In fact, he tweeted that out today.
Again.
He doesn't give credit for the economy. But I remember right around the election. In fact, you might be interested to know that I actually flew up on election day. I flew up to New York City for the election party at the Hilton Hotel because I believed, based on my research and based on I believed that God had spoken, that he was going to win. And it was a wonderful experience.
Oh, my gosh, I bet that was insanely exciting.
Well, it really was. We went in at 6:30. That's when they opened the doors. It was the New York Hilton. I'd been there many times to conferences, so I kind of knew my way around the hotel. And we had to stand the whole time. And before the evening was over, we were packed in there like sardines. And we were watching on TV and watching, you know, the count come in. And I just remember that some of the newscasters, you know, who are predicting that Hillary was going to win, and when it looked like Donald Trump might win, they started talking about how, man, things were going to go horrible with the stock market and things were going to go down.
Yeah.
I remember it very specifically because exactly the opposite happened. There was a rally almost the day of his election because people had hope, and he's cut taxes. And one of the biggest things to me is he's cut regulations, you know, which hurt business. And he's concerned about the little person in spite of what the left-wing media tries to portray.
No, and I think the proof's going to be in the pudding. And you know, regardless of what you hear in the media, the midterm elections are going to be a referendum. And I think people are going to look at, hey, what's happened in the last 2 years? Were we staying with the old trend, or are things actually turning around? And are we starting to go back the other direction now? And you can attribute that to whatever you want.
Well, besides that, everything they throw at him turns out to be a boomerang.
It does.
It really does.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's Russia. Whoops. Oh, wait, that was us. It's, you know, it's just, it's actually kind of sad.
Yeah.
We have to take one more break and celebrate a little capitalism here, and then we'll be back with the author of God and Donald Trump. His name is Stephen Strang. We hope that you will go to the website and click on the book links and his blog links and all the rest of it. Really interesting stuff. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Give me love, give me love, give me peace on earth, give me light, give me life, keep
would you ask if you had just one question?
Awesome. We're here with our guest, Stephen Strang, author of God and Donald Trump. And Stephen, we have a caller on the line who has a question for you. Fire away, Mark.
Great. Greetings.
Hey.
Hello.
Go ahead, Mark.
I don't know if I'm on the air or not.
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. Sure do appreciate the show. It's marvelous. I'd like to know if he's heard the remarks on the radio by a liberal that says Donald Trump will be booed at his memorial service. That is very spooky. I hope it tells people that they need to pray for this man to keep him safe, and I would ask all Christians to pray very deeply to preserve him, because I do believe he's a man for our time. He may save America.
Thanks, Mort.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
And do we have a mailing
address? Yeah, that's a great observation.
We'll get it for
you.
You
know, I think a lot of these left-wing commentators,
thank you,
when they predict things, it's really wishful thinking. You know, but Donald Trump has an awful lot of people who think he's wonderful. It's just that we're a deeply divided country right now. But I'm guessing that the people who think he's wonderful are ones that will come to his memorial service, which I hope is not for a long time, and the doctor this week gave him a clean bill of health, it seems.
Well, you know, speaking of that, it's funny that you say that. I was just looking that up, and so they say, despite his legendary bad eating habits, he's in excellent health, and so people posted that on Twitter. Doctor says Trump's in excellent health, and people are like, oh, more bad news.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you say about him. They're gonna say something bad.
He's in excellent health, so that's a bad thing. Oh, they expected him to go. We listen a lot to the Progressive Channel just to find out what the other side's talking about. And, they expected him to go through a full mental health panel because, you know, that's the latest thing now. He's doing a good job and all that, so he must be a nutcase. Just
well, of
amazing.
Course, if for some reason, God forbid, that he, passed away. Look who would be president. It'd be Mike Pence.
I know.
One of the strongest evangelical Christians ever to have that office. I mean, I talked to Jerry Falwell Jr. last week, and, you know, he tells a story from Corey Lewandowski on how Corey walked into the vice president's office, and he's sitting there with his Bible open, reading it, you know, in his official office in the White House. I mean, you know, thank God we've got a few people up there who are reading the Bible and trying to do what's right.
Yeah, it's, there are always people that'll do the right thing. We don't hear about them. You know, that's not popular these days. It's only the bad people. Interestingly enough. So what made you, I realize we only have a couple of minutes, but I'm kind of curious, what prompted you to write the book?
Well, first of all, I'm a publisher. You know, I publish Charisma Magazine and several others, and we publish books. Our big book is, our biggest books are by Jonathan Cahn, with names like The Harbinger and more recently The Paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2003, we published a book called The Faith of George W. Bush. The book was my idea, and we went out and recruited an author. This time, the book was my idea, and I recruited myself because, as I've already told you, I had a certain amount of personal experience, which I weave into God and Donald Trump. You know, I had a certain perspective. And also, like I said earlier, there was something that I felt needed to be discussed. And I think that I've enjoyed, as much as anything, going on a lot of media and talking about this, like saying, is it possible? You know, my book is not too emphatic. In fact, I just try to lay out a case, and hopefully the reader will come to the same conclusion, but I say, is it possible that God has a will? And I'll just mention that this week, it looks like on Friday I'll be on Fox and Friends, which will be huge, has a huge audience, of course. It's not. It won't.
So
be
yet again, we've
tomorrow,
scooped Fox and Friends.
That's
yeah.
exciting.
We're awesome. we're ahead of Fox.
Yeah, I hate to scoop them like that, but.
Well,
they got to get up early in the morning to be in front of you guys.
Yeah, see, you know, Sunday afternoon is when it's all happening. All these other people work; they're doing it during the work week. What the heck? Well, it's your. I don't know what I'm not sure what Stephen Manfredi does, but whatever promotion thing he does, he's like, hey, you want to have this author on? We're like, yeah, of course. He's always got the best guys. He's a very interesting cast of characters we've met through him.
Yeah, we do.
He does a great job.
He really does. Well, your message is very well timed, especially in light of all the foolishness last week. And I think it's great that you're helping people get kind of back into the focus of things. We could talk to you for hours. And if you could hang on after the end of the program, I need to get an address from you from somebody who called in. So hang with us, and we look forward to having you back at some point.
Again,
thank you, and
get the book?
I hope that your listeners will be motivated now to get the book, God and Donald Trump. It's available just about everywhere books are sold, and, of course, online.
I put a link on there. The picture of the book is on there, and I put a link on the page with all of your information. And God and Donald Trump, perfectly timed book, so... If you want to read the real story, this is your opportunity, yep. Folks.
Thanks for being with us, Stephen.
And, it was my privilege, and I enjoyed it. You guys are good interviewers.
Well, thanks. We just like to have a good time and learn stuff. Turns out that's all you need. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.